It all started with the simplest, the tiniest of questions. On a review on one of the VHS tapes that I had uploaded, somebody asked, "Is the sound right on this?" And so I clicked on it and played it to see what they were talking about. And that was a thread that picked apart weeks of work, caused me to redo hours of effort, and taught me a very, very important lesson about workflow. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. What that user had decided to comment on was a small sound problem on a simple anime, Simba the Lion, which came from the 1980s and had been recorded on, frankly, terrible media. But that wasn't the problem. The problem was that the sound was utterly incomprehensible. It wasn't a matter of being distorted or out of sync. It was, in every single way, terrible. Why hadn't I caught that? Well, it comes down to workflow and how I had been putting things together for anime tapes that I was dubbing, digitizing, and putting up on the Internet Archive. Facing down hundreds of tapes that I was going to have to go through, I'd come up with a pretty good system for working through as many in a single day as I could. The nature of VHS is that it can't be done faster than the speed of the tape. So you're talking 1 hour of tape taking 1 hour to digitize. What this meant was that it was really in my best interest to come up with a workflow that moved as fast as possible, required as little of my effort as possible, and that could be, to the best of my abilities and time, consistent in quality. Naturally, there's all sorts of problems with old videotapes. They suffer magnetic rot, mold, and not being well made in the first place. In fact, for many of these anime fan subs, I discovered they were being recorded on the cheapest tape and then being dubbed over two or three times, ensuring that no matter how good I was at digitizing, it was all going to look like some sort of fuzzy visual soup. But since my digitizer showed me what the video looked like, I could do my best glancing at it in virtual dub, keeping track of what the video looked like when the tapes ran out, and then swapping them out as I did so. For the soundtrack of these tapes, I wanted to listen as little as possible to what was going on, and virtual dub had a sound meter showing me whether or not any sort of signal was coming through. Therefore, it was easy enough to leave that going all the time with all of the other sound turned off and then notice whether or not the tapes themselves were making any noise. It was a simple matter then when I got a second deck and a second digitizer installed onto the same machine to have two different windows with two different images and their own sound meters going off all the time. Workflow is key here. Doing the same repetitive, dependable motions, knowing that they have the same outcome, even if it's not perfectly tuned for each individual tape, is critical when you're facing down hundreds, or in my case, thousands, of these tapes to go through. So, when I got this new workflow going, the tapes were going by like gangbusters. Between the two decks, I was doing anywhere between 15 and 25 tapes a day. Some of them running at 30 minutes or 40 minutes for an episode, while others were two-hour blockbusters, consisting either of one long movie or multiple episodes stitched together. I then tied them off, edited them down to exactly where they began and ended, named them after the tape, and then turned back to the rest of my work. Using this method, I was going through dozens of tapes in a week, taking them home and uploading them to the Internet Archive. The Anime Fan Submarine Collection, which had all of the results of this work, was growing at an incredible pace. And it had become, in many ways, background noise to the rest of the work I was trying to do. Until that single review appeared underneath one of the tapes. They simply wanted to know, was there something wrong with the sound? Now, the fact is that a lot of digitized movies have a lot of problems with codecs of interrelated formats for audio and video, ensuring that some machines can play things perfectly while others are completely baffled by whatever you've chosen to make it all work. In the case of these digitized tapes, I was using a format called Lagarith and an audio format called PCM. The both of them should have been playable in any sort of formatted player made in the last 10 years, and in fact, they were working perfectly. I downloaded the original digital files, loaded them up on my desktop, and everything involving the video was perfect, but everything with the sound was completely, utterly destroyed. It became clear to me that whatever I was doing wrong. And not only was I doing it wrong, I had been doing it wrong. And how far back had all of that been going on? This was going to be a problem because there were 330 tapes in the Anime Fan Submarine collection. So I did what I've learned to do. I reached out for help. I asked people to sit and play as many of the tapes as they could, putting all of the information into a spreadsheet to tell me whether they'd notice any sort of video or audio problems. People were very, very quick to tell me that many of these tapes were low quality. That's something I knew. But it turned out that a growing number of these had the exact same audio problem that that first tape had. And within a few days, this team of volunteers, whose work I appreciate more than anything, had nailed down that out of 330 tapes, 75 had destroyed sound. This disaster put me at a crossroads. Do I continue the work I'm doing, or do I just give up, realize it wasn't for me, that I wasn't getting it right, and that somebody else was going to take up the mantle? In my particular case, I don't like to hand off problems. I like to work out exactly what went wrong and then ask myself where I can change things to make them better and be able to catch this during the creation process instead of down the line. So, after going back to my original digitizing system, running through an incredible amount of scenarios, and investigating a whole bunch of possibilities, it turned out the problem was very simple once I knew where to look. But a moment before that, to consider the fact that so much of the technical world that I lived in and so much of my life that has been spent with these machines that I love so much has been trying to diagnose where things have gone wrong. Sometimes blaming myself, sometimes blaming hardware and software and interconnection, until finally nailing down that one bit, that one driver, that one setting that makes things right. For what it's worth, with all the cursing and considerations and yelling at the skies that things are not going your way, begging for justice from machinery and software that doesn't know from any of that, it's a lot more fun when you have friends along. It is, after all, an expedition, an adventure, a moment of dropping into an emergency, into a disaster, and determining from there how to make things work again. And all of that is so much more enjoyable when you have comrades and companions at your side. This group of people and I determined, after much effort, that there was a very bizarre activity going on related to my digitizer's device handle. You see, in the Virtual Dub digitizing program, it gives a list of all of the devices that the video and the audio are going to go out to. On this machine, with two of the same card running, there would be a card and a card name 2, and it was just a matter of putting one instance of the program towards the first card and the other instance of the program towards the second. Except there was a device that listed itself as being for one card, but it was for both. What that meant was that it was sending the exact same data down the exact same pipeline and then desperately trying to move it to one of two destinations. Instead, it was sending it to both. I'm not here to bring up questions for the Blackmagic Intensity Pro 4K makers, but I will say I was not expecting to find anything like that to be the problem. Since the device was receiving data from both cards, it was desperately putting them together, weaving them together in a sort of back-and-forth motion that was coming through multiple frames every second. This meant that it sounded absolutely terrible. Even if both cards weren't in use, it was still shuddering and making terrible noises, leaving it to the codec to figure out how it was going to turn all of this mess back into audio. As a result, it was producing sound, but the sound was devastatingly bad. Here's where my fault came in. By simply focusing on the meter, the fact that data was coming through was measured simply as sound, sound that was absolutely there. The fact that it was terrible was not something I was listening to. So, hand in hand, the creators of the software, of the driver, and myself had worked together to make sure that the absolute worst audio was being recorded for posterity and uploaded to the archive. For 75 tapes, this had gone on. Terabytes of data had been uploaded, rederived, and presented for a web streaming format, and it was all utterly worthless. After I determined that another possible device on each digitizer could be used, and only the proper card output would be added to the video file, I switched up my methods and then had to go make a stack of every tape that was still in my possession that represented unworkable sound from the spreadsheet the volunteers had put together. And for 8 days, that was what I worked on, carefully undoing, to the best of my ability, the mistakes I had made. And with that, I had a new workflow. Put in the videotape, turn on the audio preview, forward the tape, listen to the tape, make sure the setting was correct, turn off the audio preview, rewind the tape, start up the digitizing, start playing. To be truthful, it only adds about 30 or 40 seconds to each tape I'm digitizing, and then I'm assured that the audio and the video are the best quality that I can do with the equipment that I have. Time-wise, it's the smallest price to pay. And now, back on track, I'm once again digitizing 15 to 25 tapes a day, moving through the pile at incredible speed, and facing down thousands of tapes to come without any concern that they won't be done as good as they could be, given the circumstances, the cost, and my abilities. I'm sharing all this because I think it's important to understand that a lot of workflows are iterative. You do things the best you can until a unique case or a catastrophe happens. Then you revisit what you did. You add another story to your lore. You add a rule to tell people to watch out for this problem, and you move on. Eventually, the adding of all these rules and exceptions causes you to look back on the work that was done initially and realize, with horror, that you probably need to do it again. While that may sound hopeless or sad, the fact is that we can go back and revisit the work we did. The fact that the time you had it up, it became a part of people's lives, a reference point for their research, a delightful, nostalgic entertainment, means that time wasn't wasted at all, and the chance to make it even better will be met with accolades and happiness and an understanding that, rather than just getting worse, things have the potential, with a little care, a little understanding, and a little perspective, to become, in the aggregate, better. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Sean Kelly, Manxalot, John Sturm, Trixie the Cat, Dileep Reddy, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. For the nerds, I'm using two Sony 9500 MD VHS decks, medical grade, normally used for MRI machines, to do excellent, well-tracked copies of VHS tapes, not long playing, only standard play, going to Blackmagic Intensity Pro 4K cards, then going into Virtual Dub 2, a remaking of Virtual Dub with additional modifications, each of them going to the Lagarith codec, PCM uncompressed, into AVI files ranging on average about 25 to 35 gigabytes an hour, uploaded to the Internet Archive, re-derived by FFmpeg, and presented to the world within a few hours. It's at archive.org/details/fansubmarine. Hi-oh.